I'm blue. I'm a dee ba ba da. I'm a dee ba da. I'm a dee ba da.
Oh man, that brought back memories. That is a, that's a classic meme.
You know, things don't have to be memes, Josh.
It's a classic meme, if you will.
Meme girls.
Meme girls.
1, 2, 3, hit it, boy!
So get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh, shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say Antony's gonna get you!
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Kendrick Martin.
And I'm Josh Carter. Today, we are going to be covering Mercury Rising, directed by Harold Becker, written by Ryan Douglas Person, Lawrence Connor, and Mark Rosenthal. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, what we'll do here is kind of an in-depth breakdown slash deconstruction slash, you know, like analysis of a film that stars our favorite actor who starts with the letter B. Walter Bruce Willis. We'll talk about him both from a film perspective and his individual contribution. We'll add the movie to our rankings. You know, kind of talk trivia, and whisk the wheel of Willis.
So many fun things we do here. If you're interested in our previous episodes, head on over to williswaypod.com in your internet browser. We're also part of the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network, full of a bunch of like-minded and like-sounded and like-concept podcasts. You can find those over at lastoftheactionheroes.com. If you want to support this podcast, the number one thing you can do is rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Leave a star rating, leave a couple words. We would love it.
A couple words. They're just like, good podcasts.
Hey, you know, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
I would love it. So, before we dive into discussing this movie, Mercury Rising, we kind of want to give you guys an idea on if this movie is worth watching. Not every Bruce Willis movie is equal, so we came up with the patent pending?
Mm-hmm. Patent on the back. Pending.
Patent on the back. Oh my god. We came up with this sort of a system for ranking movies, where we rank movies a Bruce Willis out of a Bruce Willis. So we will give a movie a set number of letters out of the phrase Bruce Willis to determine our gusto with which we recommend somebody watch it. Anything over Bruce is a recommendation. And then however many letters after that is kind of just how much we recommend it. So I want to let Kendrick start first on this one. Kendrick, how many letters are you giving this movie?
So, I never do this, but I was trying to compare it to other movies, and I really should just go with my gut. But
yeah,
I think I'm going to give this movie a Bruck, a B-R-U-C.
Yeah. I give this movie a B for boring. I was also bored by this movie. For those of you that didn't get enough of me hating on the movie last week, oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy. Do you get it this week?
So I definitely thought the movie overall was less interesting, but I liked Bruce Willis a whole lot more in this movie. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. We are going to get into Bruce Willis later, so let's put him in our little Bruce Willis pouch, and then, like a mama kangaroo, we will throw him at an attacker later in order to scare them away.
Is that what mama kangaroos do?
That's what All the mama kangaroos that I've run into have done.
Wow, man. It puts a new meaning on the word Mother's Day.
Yeah.
If you want to get a hold of us, you could send us an email at willisweypot@gmail.com. I don't often do this, but we get a lot of spam email. You know, anybody with an email address knows, you know, you get spams right and left. And I don't often go through our spam, but I happened to look at it today. And we had a fairly hilarious, like, fake job hunt email. You know, like, jobs are waiting for you. But it was for flight attendant opportunities in Arizona. And I was thinking, what is the AI machine out there that's generating spam emails that are flight attendant jobs in Arizona are waiting for you that get people to click on them?
I don't know. Arizona flight attendants are hot, hot, hot. Come work for us. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it is Arizona. Everything there is hot, hot, hot.
Yeah. That was going to be my joke. That was going to be my joke. I just threw out the punchline. I didn't have anything else.
Go back to joke school.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
If you want to tweet your punchlines, but not whole jokes, you can please tweet them at us, WillisWayPod. You can also check us out on Instagram at WillisWayPod. We also have the aforementioned Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network Facebook page, where you can pop on over, have a discussion, see some of the other posts from the other podcasts that are going on. All right, now we're going to start talking about Mercury Rising.
It is called Mercury, the most sophisticated national security code ever created.
Once we complete its installation, it's going to be very hard for our adversaries to compromise our communications.
And it has just been broken by a 9-year-old boy.
Where did you get this number?
5099.
He's calling from his own house.
Simon, put down the phone, honey.
We slipped a message in the back of a puzzle magazine. We basically dared the amateurs to take a crack.
You were sure that no one would ever call?
But somebody did.
Some people believe
there must be nothing that connects the boy to this office. Am I clear?
That anyone is expendable. But for Special Agent Art Jeffries...
What is this? Supposed to be a missing kid.
It is. These are the parents.
This isn't just anyone.
You can come on out now. Nobody's gonna hurt you.
Well, my name is Art. I'm your friend.
I'm a stranger!
He's autistic.
I'm not going to be able to question this boy.
Probably not.
I'm your friend. See? Art is your friend.
Give him up. Take him back.
Would you give your own kid up?
It's not your kid.
Well, right now, he's nobody's kid.
By this evening, this entire situation will be contained.
What's going on?
We're talking about people who have the ear of the president.
This is way over our heads, Art.
You're telling me a 9-year-old kid cracked the government super code?
Simon, what does that say?
Look, it doesn't matter. He can read it. That's why his life is in danger.
Pictures and Imagine Entertainment. Bruce Willis.
That kid is your responsibility.
Whose responsibility is he?
Mercury Rising.
That audio was from the trailer of Mercury Rising. I'm going to read the description from IMDb. Shadowy elements in the NSA target a 9-year-old autistic savant for death when he is able to decipher a top secret code. You can find this movie on Hulu or video on demand. We don't often call this out, but the fact that we pretty much spoil the entire movie from the get-go. Josh, we haven't really talked about this, but I'm curious, listener, if you would be interested in a spoiler-free and a spoiler-full version of the review, or if people out there just listen once they've decided if they're going to watch the movie or not. Because that the reason I bring this up is because that description on IMDb, I feel like, spoils one of the major twists in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Minor as it is, but it was a bit of a twist.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie is it's pretty ridiculous. The plot is stupid, very stupid. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense in this movie. But I was right there with you, and I did like a performance that we'll specifically call out later. So I guess we can save that. But yeah, what did you think overall about this movie?
I thought that this movie, I think you kind of called it out interesting when you gave it a B for boring, because boring is a pretty descriptive way to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So since we're essentially spoiling the whole plot, the Adam Baldwin is running a NSA group where he invents a cryptography system called Mercury, which I don't think I ever caught in the movie. Like, I figured it out based off the name, but I thought Mercury rising was like an indicator of like the temperature rising.
I see.
I don't know.
During it, they're like, Mercury has fallen or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Which I'm like, oh, is it getting colder?
Yeah.
is this a prequel to Olympus Has Fallen? So they have this system that generates kind of a encrypted message in a block of numbers and characters.
It's like some big QR code before QR codes were a thing.
Yeah, kind of. We'll talk about the actual cryptography in a minute, but and essentially this 9-year-old autistic kid is able to decode it by looking at it. And mysterious people come and kill his family, and then he basically goes on the run, and Bruce Willis protects him the whole time. And about halfway through the movie is when you find out that it is the NSA who's sending those people. But I think I got the impression the movie didn't want you to know, particularly because there's that scene where those NSA guys show up to see in the park or whatever, and you're like, oh, this is when they're going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
But instead it's just like a Stern talking to, and you're like, oh, well, maybe he actually didn't kill. He wasn't like behind the killings, but then no, he was behind the killings. And he ended up just killing those guys not that long ago. I was like, what was the point of that fake out? Like, you could have just easily killed them there.
Kendrick, it's because this movie needed more twists and turns that were boring and minute the entire time.
I thought I just wasn't enough of a savant to decode the hidden message.
I wasn't enough of a savant to realize why I decided to watch this movie. That was that was my big thing.
It's because our commitment to Sparkle Motion, aka Bruce Willis, Josh. That's the only reason why we do what we
do. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So we take a great deal of pain upon ourselves in order to please everybody that listens to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about this in the Color of Night episode, I believe, about mental health representation in cinema and our inability to really speak to accuracy or accurate portrayals of those things. So I feel like that's worth mentioning again is I definitely cannot like truly talk about how an autistic person would feel about this portrayal of autism in general. I could tell it was stereotyped, and I think it's hard to not stereotype this kind of thing when it becomes such an element of a movie. But I did find an article in the Chicago Tribune that was written around the time this movie came out, 1998, that interviewed someone named Bennett Leventhal, who was a world-renowned child psychiatrist who was actually involved in the writing and directing of this movie. So the kid in this movie is played by Miko Hughes. And Bennett Leventhal is in this article talking about how he's just off frame of the movie. and he's directing the kid as to how to act and how to respond. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, good or not stereotyped, just because it's a psychotherapist does it, but child psychiatrist does it, but still interesting that they went to that extent to do. I'll put the article in the show notes when we publish this episode. But what did you think about its portrayal of autism and Miko's performance as an autistic kid?
I thought it was all right at times, and then really bad at others. So like the way that they talked about autism, I thought was better than what I was expecting. Like they didn't use the R slur in this, and I was definitely expecting them to, or they didn't that I remembered.
Well, I think I could be wrong, but I think they made the effort to explain what autism was.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe they differentiated it by using that word, but I could be misremembering. But there was a scene where a nurse and Bruce Willis talk, and he's like, "What is autism?" And she's like, "Well, this is what it is." And they kind of talk about it for a little bit.
Yeah, and that was actually handled pretty well, I thought. I thought everything that was around the kid that had autism was handled decently enough, better than I was expecting. It wasn't like it was amazing, and you wouldn't make it this way today. But the kid was really hard to watch at times.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I think here's where the stereotyping comes into play from what I'm reading, the different perspectives on this. Obviously, autism making savants is kind of a tried, overused trope and pretty totally unrealistic. But also, all of the physical tics and different elements that he performs are overdone, I think, for the camera. And he does kind of all of them. Which I think was more stereotypical. And I don't know I don't think it had to be that way. I don't think they needed, for plot reasons, him to be... He basically cannot have a conversation at all. He can, you know, say a few word sentences. But one of the articles I did read, and I don't recall where I read this, so I apologize, but one of the things... the commentaries on autism in this movie specifically was this movie portrays a loving family, and often movies with autistic kids in film tend to show kind of a scene where the parents like don't like their kid, or you know, are overworked and don't have time to care for their kid and kind of resent their kid. Like that's the common story that's often told. And this movie, you don't have any of that. He has two loving parents who seem devoted to him. And there's like a, you know, plenty of time is spent with his dad, who takes time to read a book for him. And they spend a lot of time with him. So that was called out as like a nice element to this ability to tell a story.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that like a lot of the effort was put into some of the writing and stuff around the character, and then maybe it was just the directing kind of let us down and had him play it like 400% when just playing it 100% would have been just fine.
Yeah.
So
the actual like cryptography part of this, so I've dealt a little with in my day job using like internet security technologies and how like you encrypt communications and what the, you know, when you're in a browser and there's in your URL and you have the little lock symbol and like what that means and kind of a little bit of the code behind it. And some of the output that you get does kind of look like one of those puzzles, although it's not in any way like decodable by the human eye, and it's not a thing that someone could just look at and figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that for me was like a little bit ridiculous. Just as a premise. Part
where you hear the like computer sound effects going on as he stares at it, I was just like, oh. I looked at it and I was like, is this going to be some weird alien thing or is he a robot? Because I didn't even read the plot summary before watching it. I was like, is he actually a robot? Why are we hearing this?
Yeah, that was so weird. It's very strange. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, a lot of the other parts of this plot just do not make any sense at all. Like, oh, our code is compromised by this 9-year-old kid. So instead of maybe thinking, like, oh, maybe our code has some problems. They're like, how about we kill the kid? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
if your code has problems, it's not going to stop having problems just because you killed one person who decoded it.
I was never sure if they were trying to capture the kid or kill the kid. But one of the things that really made me frustrated was so Alec Baldwin hires like an assassin who kills a whole bunch of people trying to get this kid. And he just does it in the worst way, where if he had waited like 30 seconds or thought about it for any amount of time, he could have easily achieved his job. Like in the beginning, he shows up to the kid's house and he has like a fake identity and the parents let him in. And then he just immediately kills the parents. And then he can't find the kid. And then the cops show up and he's like in a hurry. So he has to kind of haphazardly fake a murder suicide, which is never really bought. And if he had just gone inside and been like, oh, where's your son? And they could have brought him down like bada bing, bada boom. No problem. No movie. No story.
Yep.
And that kind of stuff happens frequently where he just doesn't think. He just kind of like does something stupid and then is like, well, I guess I must keep going.
Maybe he got hired on like Fiverr or something. It's like Fiverr hiring an assassin.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. And Alec Baldwin's performance as like a mustache twirling NSA guy. I just found like, whatever. Like, didn't do it for me.
The thing that I've seen him the most in is probably 30 Rock. So I couldn't separate him from that character because he's delivering everything with like kind of the same like businessy sort of vibe. And so I was like, is this just the guy from 30 Rock? I think Jack is what his character's name is or something like that. That was pretty ridiculous. Apparently he was contractually obligated to be in this movie or another Universal film, because he backed out of a Universal film, and part of backing out of it was he had to do one in the future. And so he just did this so they'd stop pestering him. But he doesn't seem like he cares at all about this movie.
Yeah, no. And I think it's poorly written and confusing, and his role as like bad guy is never really quite explained.
No.
There's a couple other interesting casts and characters, though. We have Chi McBride, who plays Bruce Willis's character, Jeffrey's his kind of like coworker and fellow FBI agent, I think is what they are. And so they have to, he's kind of like Bruce Willis's man on the inside. Mm-hmm. He's been in a bunch of other movies and TV shows. And then there's the other NSA agents. So you have like these nerds who both of them are kind of the same character, and then they both die in kind of uninteresting ways. And there's also one of them is dating a third NSA agent. And I felt like their whole relationship, like, we didn't need three guys. We didn't need all this going on. We could have just had one guy and then the woman character.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be able to have, like, guy one gets incredible news, guy two goes, there's no way. Guy one goes, see for yourself.
Yeah, but what? They could have done that with the girl. They didn't need a...
No, it's got to be two guys, Kendrick.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The woman who played that NSA agent, the actress's name is Carrie Preston, and she was on... she was a side character in the TV show The Good Wife and The Good Fight, a TV show that I really liked And I really liked her character on this. And I haven't seen her. She's been in a lot of other stuff. So I know that, you know, you could probably find other things she's very popular in. She's in an episode of Arrested Development. She's in all kinds of stuff. But her character in The Good Wife / The Good Fight is extremely silly and ridiculous. And it was fun to see her in this movie. Another character was Peter Stormare, who shows up briefly as a bad guy who fights with Bruce Willis before dying. And I thought that we had seen him in a Bruce Willis movie before now, but I was mistaken. But he is in one coming up. Do you know what that movie is?
Mm-mm.
No. All right, well, it'll be a surprise to you.
Ooh, I'm excited. It's gonna be fun.
I like him.
Yeah, the other, like, big what-the-hell moment that I had when watching this movie as far as, like, the plot goes is the good guys at one point are, like, kind of split on whether or not they are going to trust Bruce Willis or not. And then there's, like, blackmail, yada, yada, yada. Basically, the blackmail comes out, like, after the bad guy's, like, I will be the good guy and then I will take the kid away and take him into protective custody. The NSA is taking over now, not the FBI. And then the FBI is like, okay. And then FBI agent is like, hey, boss, that guy's a bad guy. And they're like, oh, shit. And then the next scene, they have like a huge squad of FBI guys. And then they're like, wait until the kid is in the guy's arms. And then we send in the FBI squad. And then they like wait for the kid to be in Alec Baldwin's arms. And then they're like, now we go in. Now that he has a hostage. I'm like, why didn't they just go in earlier? What?
Yeah, the ending, like, I was, you know, I had my problems with this movie, but then the ending, the last, like, 15 minutes, I was just like, am I in a fever dream?
Yeah, I was like, did they reshoot this? Because it feels so bad. I was like, maybe
it felt to me like when you're in an improv scene and it's kind of going so-so, but you're vastly overshooting your time, and you're just like, we need to quickly solve all of our problems. Okay, bye.
3-2-1 boom.
Yeah. 3-2-1 boom. Yeah. Oh no, the world's gonna explode. Like that kind of ending.
Yeah. It was so stupid.
I made a mediocre movie worse, I think, was that ending.
Oh yeah, for sure. Let's see. I also wrote down one or two other things about this movie. One thing that I really liked about this movie is how aggressively 90s all of the tech was. Like the whole signing into the email sequence and Bruce Willis guesses the email password and like.
So did you know what was going on there? Because he talks to the NSA and they're like, we're going to set up an email.
Oh, yeah.
Einstein or something. And the next thing we see is he's at a public library talking to a librarian. And they're in like an email system and he's just like, let's try FBI. And then he's like trying to log into the FBI. And I'm like, where is he? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I guess we're supposed to assume. Go ahead.
I guess we're supposed to assume that he is at something, some kind of, public library, and the librarian is teaching him how to email. And anybody with a computer can just be like, I would like to log into, let me scroll, the CIA today.
Yeah, that was so ridiculous. It's like, when on earth would anybody have let anybody just like, oh, try to just guess random email passwords and get into the CIA or the NSA or... Yeah, it was so ridiculous. This movie was fairly progressive, though, for its time, in that the NSA were the overreaching bad guys. So, a little bit ahead of its time, honestly.
I liked how the NSA guys were like, you FBI folks like to call us no such agency. I was like, oh.
What a dig. They'll never recover.
Yeah.
A few other dumb things that I wrote down that I'm just gonna kind of go through lightning fast. At the beginning of the movie, the dad is like, oh, I'm home from work. Sorry I got home so late. And she's like, the wife is like, well, I told our kid that he could stay up until you got here. He's like, oh, man, buddy, you should be in bed by now. It's so late. And it's, like, light outside still. I'm like, does this kid go to bed at 4:30?
Josh, I don't know if you remember this, but kids go to bed at the early times.
At the early times. Not at 4:30. When I was a kid, I was allowed to stay up until 5:30. Easily. Yeah, so that was kind of silly. Also, he, like, the bad guy... Faceless Goon walks into the house and he's like, hey, I need to talk with your kid. Bang, bang. And then like 30 seconds later, the police are like, wee. And if we know anything about police, we know that they don't show up in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course, like the dad was able to get the death call.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Catch me rolling my eyes. Yeah. So that was... That was so ridiculous. Also, shout out to last week when we talked about the Jackal. There was some bad CGI trains in that movie, and we got some more bad CGI trains in this movie.
Yeah.
And then my favorite part of this movie. At one point, they're having a fight at the end, and then Alec Baldwin and Bruce Willis are falling out of a helicopter. And then Bruce Willis kind of kicks Alec Baldwin away, and then he also falls. So it's Alec Baldwin falling... And then Bruce Willis falling right behind him. And because of air and the way that that works, you will hit the ground basically the same, like a tiny bit after the other person that's falling, if you fell a tiny bit after them. But in this movie, it's like Alec Baldwin gets kicked, Bruce Willis falls, and that happens like within a second. And then Alec Baldwin hits the ground, and then Bruce Willis's stunt double is within the frame of that fall. And then he goes, ah, and just, like, leans over and hits the ground. It was amazing.
I was reminded, with that whole scene with the helicopter and everything, I was reminded of the ending of
Die Hard 2.
Boy Scout.
Oh, okay.
With the helicopter and scene at the game. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was so, so ludicrous. Like... Helicopter sequences are just nuts.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, you ready for our pew 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 Star Trek connection?
We have a repeat. A three-peat. Actually, I don't know how many times we've had him. John Doman.
Oh, good old John Doman.
I know. Yeah.
He's the, what's the oboist's name?
We've already forgot our oboist.
Oh, Mike, no.
Mike Boyd or something like that?
John Boyd? Oh, fuck.
Brrr.
What
Doing
is
a
his
look
name?
Up.
Tom Boyd?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's Tom Boyd.
Tom Boyd. He's the Tom Boyd of the actors.
Yeah. So we've mentioned many episodes of his role in Star Trek. In this movie, he is one of the FBI agents at the beginning, I believe. His name is Supervisor Hartley. I think he plays... So the movie opens with a bank robbery.
Oh, yeah.
A very silly bank robbery, which we'll get to here when we talk about Bruce Willis. But I think he plays Supervisor Hartley, if I recall. Also, James McDonald was in this movie. He played Captain James Wainwright in an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. One of my favorites, the Little Green Men episode of Deep Space Nine.
Oh my gosh, that episode's hilarious.
And in Mercury Rising, he plays the SWAT team leader Francis. So I think he was also at the beginning with the bank robbery scene.
So they really got their Star Trek connection in, so that any Star Trek nerds, they didn't have to watch the rest of the movie. You could just watch the beginning sequence.
Yeah, they were like, well... We got to check that box for that podcast that'll be going on in 25 years.
Yeah. Really got to make sure that we're future-proofing our tech here. Mm-hmm. Our cryptography stuff is just going to be completely solid. However,
that's silly.
So good. Speaking of silly, this movie cost $60 million to make, the same as The Jackal. So, like, I don't know how much money Sidney Poitier was asking for, but if this movie, which had about the same amount of, like, action set pieces as The Jackal did, was the same budget, I don't know. All I'm saying is that Sidney probably could have asked for more money. And
so I was gonna say, I thought that The Jackal had much bigger bang for its buck. Most of Mercury Rising takes place in office buildings or in downtown Chicago, or whereas the Jackal is, you know, they got lake houses,
they got boats,
yeah, Jack Black. It's in Russia, it's in Belgium, it's in airports.
J.K. Anyway. Simmons being like, I'm not gonna write it down, and then he writes it down.
yeah, I'm not gonna write it down as I write it down.
But this movie, audiences liked it okay, and it got $93 million at the box office, so it had a net of 33, and it had a 21% on Rotten Tomatoes, which means that 21% of critics were like, all right.
How much money did The Jackal make again?
The Jackal made $99 million net.
So they made it. They had about the same income to spend. Interesting.
Yeah. So, for whatever reason, the Jackal just did a ton better. And also, I can't tell if the budget always is including like the ad campaign, or not. I think that that's calculated differently. So, I don't know if like the Jackal spent another $40 million on the ad campaign, and Mercury Rising only spent like $15 million or whatever.
Interesting.
So, I don't know.
Cool.
But yeah, that's the box office.
All right, let's talk about Brucey Boy. So, interesting how I mentioned this last week, how we hadn't had an action movie in a long time, and now we have kind of two by the numbers action movies back to back.
Yeah.
Interesting. Neither of them are necessarily great, but I found myself enjoying Bruce Willis much more in this movie.
Yeah, I thought that Bruce Willis's performance was actually pretty good. Like, you can tell that he gives a crap, and
he still does action hero things. Like, he's still, you know, doing the action stuff, saving people, but the movie's given the space to it explain why. And that opening scene, the bank robbery, which, as dumb as it was, with the weird like family bank robbers, that was just all very strange, but at least you kind of just are seeing he watches these teenagers die who are trying to rob a bank, and that affects him. And then there's some like,
well, for the
hand wavy
minutes
got
of the movie.
Yeah, they show that scene over and over again. One of the things, though, that I thought that was set up but never really paid off was nobody believes Bruce Willis because he has paranoid delusions. Like, in his file, he has paranoid delusions, especially after that undercover job went wrong.
Yeah.
And so when the NSA kidnaps or, you know, kills these people and the kid, and he's on the run, people are, you know, his coworker is telling him, his other agent is like, don't run off with that kid. Like, come in. And he's like, no, the NSA is after me. And like, no one believes him. And there's this major scene on the train, and they almost get hit by the train, and then they kill a guy on the train. And that's the one thing he's like, call the CTA and find out if there's any dead bodies. And he's like, nope, no dead bodies. But there's right before that, there was a massive thing that goes on in the hospital.
Oh yeah. With
both of them running, and that guy, the, you know, faceless villain running in a fake doctor's outfit, brandishing a gun. which a lot of people saw. I feel like that would have been fairly obvious. You know, look, I'm not being paranoid. There really was someone trying to kill this kid.
Yeah, and wouldn't there be like cameras in that hospital too, presumably? Like in the hallways?
Maybe. I mean, it was the 90s, so hard to say how many cameras they'd have. But after that, it just keeps going up. Like that one guy is shot in the middle of a crowd and all this other stuff. And you're just thinking, there's plenty of evidence as to why Bruce Willis should be taken, you know, for the truth. And he finally is, but that never was really a moment of tension where nobody believes him and then he's kind of proven right. Yeah. It's just kind of brought up a couple times and then they're like, well, whatever. And then
imagine if this movie made the gutsy choice to have him be wrong and have all these things think that, like, him think that all these things are happening, but they're not actually.
Like it's all in his head?
Yeah.
Wow. That'd be a totally different movie.
It would be very different. I don't know if it'd be better, but it'd be different.
What did you think of his relationship with that woman he met in the coffee shop?
I thought it was all right. Like, I was kind of half paying attention because this movie was B for boring. So I thought it was believable in that I was watching the movie, kind of looking at my phone, looking up trivia about this movie, kind of.
I agree that it was very blando. I don't really have anything to say about that relationship. Like, it was interesting that it didn't go for romantic. It just went for kind of like a parenting mm-hmm. aspect. Like, they're both trying to take care of this kid. I couldn't believe he asks her, like, hey, can you watch this kid? I have to go run an errand. And she's like, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. I just don't know. I have definitely had people, like, in a coffee shop or whatever, be like, oh, can you watch my computer? And then I'm like, sure. And they'll, like, go to the bathroom for, like, a really long time. And you're like, what if I had to leave? Like, what would I do?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll watch it all the way to the computer bank where I deposit it.
Yeah. Sucker.
I'll teach you to take a 7-hour poop.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, very, very silly. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That was weird. Because, like, the movie, part of me was thinking, like, would this movie just work if there was, like, some little robot machine that could just decode things that they're running after? Like, how much does it being a kid add to the movie? And, like, throughout the movie, they have to keep being like, well, Bruce Willis got to go do this thing, and the kid doesn't have to be there, so we got to explain how the kid is, like, babysat for this little bit. So they kept, like, writing themselves into that situation, and it was just, it got pretty old by the end of the movie, I'd say.
I mean, that's the whole reason why Bruce Willis cares, is because he's a kid. If it was, like, a computer chip, I don't think Bruce Willis would have cared.
Yeah.
I don't think his character would have cared. He cared because he was feeling remorse after watching that bank robber die and now was trying to protect another kid.
Yeah. I guess if you're going to make a movie about, like, trying to protect a kid or whatever, I feel like Logan did it a lot better, where... Mm. I don't know.
Fox movie about Wolverine?
Yeah. Like, I feel like they did a better job about giving their kid more personality and giving their hero more of a weight on their shoulders about their duty that they have to do and everything like that. So,
yeah. Good call out.
Yeah.
Where would you rank this movie on our list? You know, we're getting close to 30 movies.
We are getting close to 30 movies. It might be time for us to go through and rewatch all 30 of them and then reassign the spots.
That was exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, so I like this movie about the same as The Jackal. I gave them both Bs. I do think that even though The Jackal could probably be fixed almost entirely in the editing room and be made into a much better movie, not like the most amazing movie ever, but a much better movie, I think that this movie's problems are more with the writing, so it's almost at, like, a hard limit. If I was just given this raw footage, I don't know that I could make a significantly better movie than what we got. But Bruce Willis did do a good job, so I'm going to rank it one movie above The Jackal. I'm going to give it number 21 out of 26. Yeah, 26. 26?
Yeah, this is our 26th.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I think I'm going to go... So I think I like The Jackal a little bit more, even though Bruce Willis definitely did a better job here. Mm-hmm. I think I like The Jackal a little bit more. So I'm going to go one below The Jackal at 18.
That's funny that we liked them both about the same.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this before, but I wish that there was like a... we could have like an animated way to... view our lists compared to one another and then diverge so we could watch our own selves, because when we started out we were, you know, we only had one or two movies. It was like, well, Blind Date is our number one movie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be funny if we could watch it grow. Okay, so with that said, Joshua.
Yes.
Do you know what time it is?
I do know what time it is. It's time for The Wheel of Willis.
The Wheel of Willis. And what is The Wheel of Willis, you ask?
Well?
The Wheel of Willis. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to have to make something up. I didn't have a good explanation in my brain.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to whatever you're going to make up, so...
Okay, so The Wheel of Willis. It's like a big old cheese wheel. Except for we have it shaped in the face of Bruce Willis's head. So each day...
It's head cheese.
Yeah, it's head cheese. Each day we'll eat a different piece of head cheese. And that's what we do. I think I explained it basically as well as anybody could. So you ready to... No, I'm just kidding. Anybody who's like a first-time listener is like, what the fuck are they even doing? This makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Even a long-time listener, this could be every episode listener, they'd still think, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, Wheel of Willis is basically, we'll spin it, and then it'll be like some sort of prompt, and then we'll have to come up with an answer to it. So if you guys ever have suggestions to send in about questions that you want us to ask, generic questions are great, especially stuff that's like, would this Bruce Willis character, blah, 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 or... anything like that. Those are great sort of questions for us to throw in there. And then we're going to start crediting people that give us suggestions too. So we'll be like, Nathan asked this question or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something that we spin and then we'll kind of tackle whatever question it throws our way.
Alrighty. And the other thing that's really unique about what we do here at Where There's a Willis, There's a Way podcast is we always say the same thing in unison when we spin the Wheel of Willis.
Oh, absolutely.
And we say, whisk that wheel.
All right. How long could Bruce Willis have a frog on his shoulder in this movie before it breaks your immersion?
Do we know who sent this one in?
I have no idea. No.
Well, in the beginning of the movie, he's kind of crouched down in that bank.
Yeah.
So he could have had it for quite a while there. Fair. Maybe if he was hiding in that rainy swamp where Alec Baldwin, you know, gives those guys a talking to, it could have been a frog there.
Otherwise, so you're saying that it wouldn't be very long before your immersion would have been broken.
Yeah, not very long. What about you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say the same thing. Maybe in some other movies he could get away with that. Like, if he was doing that in North or whatever, I would just be like, all right, yeah, that makes sense.
But, yeah, that's a frog.
Yeah, but in this movie, I think I would probably call it out pretty quickly. It'd be a pretty off-brand for it. So I'm going to say maybe 4 seconds or 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And I'd have to pause and be like, what is going on?
Yeah, computer, enhance quadrant 17. Like,
Wow, your computer's almost as noisy as this kid is in Mercury Rising. What's his name? Simon?
Yeah, Simon. Simon. I did like how we had another Simon who solves puzzles Bruce Willis movie, because that was kind of what happened in Die Hard 3, right?
Was it?
Where the bad guy's name is Simon, and he's like, I have a riddle for you.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he was making puzzles, but yes.
I mean, puzzles and Simon, you know. It's a whole thing.
Puzzles, smuzzles. Okay. Thanks for listening to this episode of Where There's a Willis, There's a Way. You can follow us on social media at Willis Way Pod. Shoot us an email. Send us those Willis Wheel suggestions, williswaypod@gmail.com. And remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find me on Twitter at Joshing Carter.
And you can find me on Twitter at KMartinX. That's KMartinix. Last week we started doing this thing called the final toast, the sweet relief. I don't know. We'll figure out what it's called, but our parting goodbye. Josh, do you have a little tidbit to give people this week?
Yes, I do. So I am going to go ahead and shout out a show that one of our friends of the show is working on. It's called Deep Shots, and it's a show kind of in the vein of Hot Ones, where it's going to be an interview show where they're going to do several shots throughout this interview process. And that first episode will be dropping soon, or will have already been dropped by the time that this podcast comes out. So definitely wanted to give it a shout out. You can find that on YouTube by looking up Deep Shots on the Saucepan Network, is I believe what his YouTube name is. And Sauce is SAUSE. So you can find that on there.
It's the British spelling of sauce.
Yes, exactly. He may have some very familiar guests on a future episode.
Ooh,
so we'll have to keep you guys posted on that one.
You don't say.
I know. I do say.
Well. I want to give a shout out this week to the show Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso is a TV show on Apple TV Plus, which I understand is not the easiest TV streaming service to come by. But it is just about ready to start season 2. Actually, I wonder if this season 2 will have premiered when this... It might premiere right around the same time this episode comes out. But essentially, Jason Sudeikis plays a American football coach from Kansas who gets hired to go coach a soccer team in London. And so he packs up his things and moves to London, knowing nary a thing about soccer. And it sounds like it would be like, you know what kind of humor it is, but it is quite heartwarming, very sweet and kind, and extremely hilarious. So that is Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus.
I'm really excited to watch that. I haven't seen it just yet, but I have heard nothing but good things about it. And one of my roommates does have Apple TV Plus, so I will definitely have to use that.
Nice. I actually watched it once and then rewatched. Then I met someone who had never seen it, so I rewatched it, and then it happened again. And so I watched, you know, bits and pieces of it a third time, and then it's still a show that I'll just be like, oh, let's watch a little bit of this episode. So
nice. I've
seen it a lot. It's very good. I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it and watch it at some point.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the movie Armageddon. I can't believe we've made it to Armageddon. I feel like this is a big moment.
Yeah, this is going to be the movie that I will have the hardest time spelling out of any other movie that we've covered so far.
Well, fortunately, this is an audio medium, and you won't need to be spelling it a lot. Although, now that I know this, I should just challenge you at random to spell it.
It's just a spelling bee where there's just one word over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically how I taught myself to spell necessary. It's like, too many C's and S's and mm-hmm.
A lot of those are unnecessary.
Josh is disconnected from the call.
You know, Josh, it occurs to me, the existence of an Armageddon means that there must be a Legageddon also.
And a Headageddon. Mm-hmm. And a...
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. I hear us ourselves being played off by our own selves. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Have a good one. Goodbye. Oh, yeah.